I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together. Have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're doing a bonus episode.
Kind of in celebration of your recent birthday. So happy recent birthday, Caveman.
Oh, thank you.
Hooray.
Thank you.
I love you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And I hope you enjoyed my birthday present.
Oh, your birthday present to me was amazing.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for my birthday episode, because it's my birthday, and I wanted to choose a couple movies that I like and I like to talk about. One of those is Ridley Scott's Kingdom of Heaven from 2005.
I'm just going to very quickly bring up that for my birthday month, I had to watch a bunch of scary movies.
Yeah, you loved them.
That I didn't want to watch.
Every single one of them.
And
every single one of them, you were just like, oh my God, Steve, this is making me love horror more and more.
I don't remember that.
I know Abigail made you
love. I did love Abigail.
And Slither.
Yeah, no. Okay, Slither was great too. But still, it would have been nice.
I apologize for
It Follows.
It Follows.
You'd fucking better. I hated that goddamn movie.
And I apologize for The Shining as well.
We had no choice in that.
I know, but it was still on your birthday month.
Are you going to apologize to me when we have to watch Hereditary?
No. Hey, you know what? You're getting more and more into these horror movies.
I don't think I'm going to get into Hereditary,
though. You came and saw Nosferatu with me.
I did, yeah.
And you really enjoyed Nope.
I did, shockingly. I thoroughly enjoyed Nope. What other, like, quasi-horror films have we watched recently that I've been like, okay. So, yeah, anyways, this podcast is changing how I view movies and blah, blah, blah. I'm just saying, you couldn't have thrown me, like, fucking Romeo and Juliet in October or something else. Like, you've picked all the bonus episodes, sir. I picked like one. So I would like to get some bonus episodes in here and make you watch these films with me with a critical Movie Mingle eye.
We got some slots open.
Yeah.
September and October. So start picking those bonus episodes now.
You son of a bitch, but okay. Anyways, hi everybody.
So yeah, we're Kingdom of Heaven.
To be fair, I also really fucking love this movie, and it had been a very long time since I've seen it. How could I? Well, actually, I was about to be like, how could I not? But we just watched Gladiator 2, also Ridley Scott, right?
Yeah.
And it was boring as fuck, dude.
Not just Ridley Scott's not the only thing that Gladiator and Kingdom of Heaven have in common together.
I'm sure we'll get to that in a second. But my point is that you were afraid that I wouldn't like this movie. This was a movie that, like, when we started dating, you were like, it's very important to me that you watch the director's cut of this movie. Actually, I don't know if the director's cut had come out yet.
I think the director's cut, not when we were dating.
But I mean, you very much were like, this is a movie you have to watch with me, but it has to be the director's cut.
I liked this movie even when there was just a theatrical version.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people don't like the theatrical version.
I remember seeing it once, I think. It might have been when you showed it to me.
To skip ahead a little bit, it got a 39% from critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, boy.
39. And that is the theatrical version.
Does the director's cut have a...
There's no, unfortunately, information on the director's cut.
I saw the theatrical cut once because, and I think it was because you were like, we have to watch this movie. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's probably me being like, watch it.
And I was like, fine, but you have to watch. It's a mad, 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 mad world with me.
Okay. 72% from audiences though.
Yeah, it was a good fucking movie.
72 is perfectly respectable.
Yeah. This is a great fucking film. Anyways. So yes, we have both loved it for a very long time. But when we watch it, it's the director's cut.
Yeah, anymore.
Yeah.
It's worth
the 3 hours.
I'm not going back to the theatrical cut anymore.
In fact, I'm trying to convince my coworker to watch it. And I was like, all you need is 3 hours and 10 minutes. Just please, please, please.
And, you know, I know how much you don't really like long movies.
Okay. It's not that I don't like long movies. As long as I am entertained.
Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
And if I, you know, little Maggie of Movie Mingle podcast, if I can look at a film and be like, this movie's too long, as a person who fucking loves movies, like, maybe they should cut some things out, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, the original run.
And sometimes, like, fucking movies are just too goddamn long for what they are. Like Gladiator 2.
Gladiator 2 is too long.
Yeah. And I would watch another hour of Kingdom of Heaven. I would watch a 4-hour Kingdom of Heaven movie. But that's also because I genuinely like this film and I care about it.
Gladiator 2 is 4 minutes longer than the theatrical cut of Kingdom of Heaven.
And that's too long.
It was too long of a movie.
Yeah.
It needed to be cut down. There were plenty of scenes that I could totally point out to you, like, don't need that, don't need that, don't need that.
And sometimes that's my issue with why a movie is too long, is I could just see where it should have been edited down. Other times it's because I don't want to watch it, and why is it over 2 hours? But, you know, it depends on the movie. It's not that I dislike long movies.
So if you're out there listening to us not knowing who Ridley Scott is.
Why? How?
It happens. Not everybody knows everything. And it's okay.
I guess.
I don't even know everything.
Well, that's for sure.
I admit it.
Where's the clip,
I'm humble,
Steve?
Enough to admit that I'm awesome. Ridley Scott, famous god in sci-fi lovers' eyes for doing the original Alien movie and the original Blade Runner. Those are the two movies that I think it's, those are what make Ridley Scott really beloved. And then,
are those your, like, if you like Ridley Scott, you have to like these two films?
No, but it would be weird that you didn't like them. If you
Aliens?
Like Ridley, I feel like if you, not Aliens.
Oh, Alien. Hope you could hear my eye roll, folks. Oh, yeah. Alien and Blade Runner.
Felt it. Yes.
You know, I haven't Alien seen either one of those movies.
It's okay. And see, and that's essentially it. You are a Ridley Scott fan in the sense that there are a couple Ridley Scott movies that you probably really like.
Oh, yeah.
Like
no.
this one.
Yeah.
And probably The Martian.
The Martian is a great film. Let's see.
I mean, we got Thelma and Louise, Gladiator, Hannibal, which I know
love
you love.
Hannibal. I do love Robin Hood.
Black Hawk Down.
I fucking love Black Hawk Down.
Matchstick Men.
I did not enjoy Matchstick Men as much as one might think.
That's all right.
Yeah.
He has done at least 5 movies with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, that's about right. He does a lot of epics.
And his most recent films were Napoleon and Gladiator 2.
Which, I didn't see Napoleon for so many reasons. But
I did, and...
Any good?
Just like with Gladiator 2's opening battle scene is essentially the best part, is the battles.
Yeah.
If you watch Napoleon believing that it was purposely made into a comedy, like that's the genre you're watching, it's Napoleon the comedy by Ridley Scott, it totally works. And you're just like, okay, I understand. This is a comedy I'm watching.
No, then maybe that's how I'll watch it. Although, I don't really like Joaquin Phoenix, but here we are. I'm not saying that Ridley Scott hasn't done some good stuff in a while. But, you know,
he's always hit and miss. And everybody has always talked about how Ridley Scott is hit and miss. You're either going to go for...
It has to be the source material, too, right?
You're either going to go in for the next, like, really amazing Ridley Scott film.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be like, oh, well, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
And that's,
and
how
that's
I felt
subjective,
with,
too. Because,
that's how I felt with Napoleon Gladiator 2.
Yeah, because there are people out there that fucking love Napoleon and Gladiator 2, but say don't like The Martian or didn't like Robin Hood. And we're over here like, they're the best, so... I get the subjectiveness of it, but still.
I mean, he's really good at sci-fi.
Yeah.
And
The Martian.
But The Martian is also a sci-fi.
God, The Martian's a funny fucking movie.
But I think that those are always really Scott's strong points.
Mm-hmm.
I know people don't, you know, it's not saying that every sci-fi movie he makes is great.
Yeah.
Not everybody loved Prometheus.
Yeah. Did you?
I enjoy certain parts of it.
That's
I own it on Blu-ray,
fair.
But I really enjoy certain parts of it. Visually, beautiful, yeah. beautiful film. And then Alien Covenant, I do not like at all. I've only seen it the one time I saw it in theaters because after Prometheus, I was like, okay, I'll go watch another.
Yeah.
Because of where Prometheus ended, I thought that it was going to be a direct sequel yeah. from where we left off. And it wasn't really, I think, like decades passed by from the last time. And I was like, oh, great. So everything that we left...
Yeah, everything that I liked is gone now.
It was a very messy movie.
You know, there's always going to be... If you have to put something in a list, there's always going to be a bottom one. And that bottom one will be subjective.
And just like with this movie, how the director's cut, in my opinion, is superior.
Yeah.
Many reviewers yeah. of Kingdom of Heaven
yeah.
said that the director's cut is the definitive version of the film. And that's mainly because everything that you don't get or...
Understand
in the
theatrical cut.
In the theatrical cut, totally is revealed mm-hmm. in the director's cut.
They really do cut out serious plot lines.
Yeah.
And
it's like, you wonder why they chose to cut versus...
I get why a studio tried to say to him, hey, cut this under 3 hours.
Right.
Like, we won't release an over 3 hour long
film. We need it, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because theaters don't want to... Yeah. Carry a 3 hour plus
we need
movie.
Like a tight 2:45
yeah
and
we need you to bring it in under 2.5
yeah
which you did
you know and he could have cut the battle scenes down a little bit he could have cut some erroneous shots but he did like there are a lot of smaller erroneous shots in the director's cut that weren't in the theatrical that don't really add to the story but they add to the ambiance but entire plot lines were cut and a lot of plot holes in the theatrical version are fixed because of the director's cut and it's a shame that at the time they weren't trusting enough to let him put out his very long vision but do you think it would have made a difference maybe critically
I think critically it would have made a difference for sure I think your average moviegoer probably would see the time and be like, no, not for me. Like, I don't want to watch a 3 hour movie with Orlando Bloom or I think I was drawn to this because it's the Crusades. And because of Robin Hood, I've always been interested in the Crusades.
Yeah.
That
is probably the top Crusade story. Although that was just in Prince of Thieves, though, right? And also the was it always a Crusades thing? You're right. It's always been.
The King of England
yeah.
is away from the throne
because of the Crusades yeah.
which leaves the throne up for grabs. And that's
kind of what
Prince John or the Sheriff of Nottingham, depending on which
version you're watching. Yeah. No, okay. I understand.
The only one that may not have talked about that may have been the animated one. The Disney one?
It's been a long time since I've seen that version, but that fox is hot.
They may have mentioned something when King Richard came home in that movie. I don't know. It's been too long.
Yeah. See, personally, I don't care much for the Crusades. So I was drawn to this movie by, like, the epicness of that trailer. Because that trailer's fucking epic.
I just rewatched it.
That trailer is great.
It's cut really well.
And
I remember the trailer. It's cut very well.
Yeah. It gives you enough to be like, I'm very intrigued by this.
I'm intrigued by the way, like the way it's filmed.
It's a lot of
action.
People opening doors and establishing shots of beauty and Ava Green's face, which we will talk about.
That's all I need.
Because her character does a lot of staring off into the middle distance. But,
well, you know, there's something over there that's worth looking at.
Yeah, and they had to make sure that the audience knew that she was looking at it. But that's the most criticism I'll ever give to Ava Green's face. God, it's perfect. So I was intrigued by the people in it. And the trailer, but I could have cared less about the Crusades.
Story.
Yeah.
Crusades in general.
I'm not a religious person.
Well,
it's only recently that I've started to care.
You know, any religious war is dumb, in my opinion. But the Crusades especially.
They were pretty fucking dumb.
They were pretty dumb.
Yeah.
A lot of people died for really dumb reasons.
Yeah, and all of those people were, for the most part, themselves religious fanatic zealots
that were just
so convinced
that this
what
was,
they were doing was God's
was
plan.
God's will but both sides believed that it was their God's will
yeah.
to take Jerusalem as their own.
I'm telling you, maybe it's for the best that they happened. Because could you imagine if those people had lived, what this world would look like now? I'm just saying, history trickles down. If you, you know,
you're saying specifically zealots being killed on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Better than having zealots live.
Yeah, no, actually, yeah. To an extent, if you're that level of zealot, then yes. But
enjoy your holy war.
Have fun. I'm gonna be
binge. Have fun storming the castle.
They're never gonna make it.
Oh man,
that would be me. Godspeed, boys. I'm gonna go watch Star Wars again.
Kingdom of Heaven was written by William Monahan. He wrote the screenplays for The Departed, which is an amazing movie. My favorite personal Martin Scorsese film. Body of Lies, which I believe has Russell Crowe in it. The Gambler with Mark Wahlberg. And Mojave with Oscar Isaac and Garrett Hedlund.
Yeah, I've never seen that movie, but I've heard good things. But I know it's fucking wacky. As much as I don't like horror films, I also really don't like fucking wacky films. You know, like,
wacky fucking or fucking wacky?
Fucking wacky. Okay. If Garrett Hedlund and Oscar Isaac were doing some wacky fucking, I would have seen that movie.
Okay. Just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah.
And then we come to it. The music of Kingdom of Heaven.
Motherfucker.
Was done by Harry Gregson Williams.
Motherfucker. How has he suddenly become the thing? But also, thank you. Also, honestly, though, I was listening to the soundtrack after we watched it. I pulled up the soundtrack and I've been listening to it at a few points. It's very Lion Witch in the Wardrobe.
Sure.
But, like, the battle parts of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which are my favorite parts of that score.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to it and I'm like, how have I not been writing to this music forever? Because this is epic as fuck. But for me, it's the music that he didn't produce that's in the movie and in the trailer that I associate most with this film.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And we can talk about that after we talk about Harry Gregson Williams, right?
Yes. Wow. Harry Gregson Williams.
My brain and my mouth are not actually physically connecting right now. But
so we have talked about him before. Yeah. When we did Shrek, our Shrek episode. He's also worked on Ants, Chicken Run, like Maggie said, the two Narnia movies, the first four Shrek movies, Man on Fire, Team America, World Police.
Fuck yeah.
The Martian, The Town, The Equalizer, and Gladiator 2.
Yeah, like the mother. I mean, Gladiator 2, he did a pretty legit job.
He did, the music for Gladiator 2 was good.
He did there have was to a use lot of themes.
He had to use a lot of Hans Zimmer's themes, but
apparently Harry was mentored by Hans Zimmer.
That's cool.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer has had, you know, a lot of our favorite composers that aren't Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer has helped and championed, and you
didn't
know,
Ludwig Göransson and Hans Zimmer.
Yeah,
like
they've been connected. You know, he helped Daft Punk do Tron. Yes. So Tron is essentially a Hans Zimmer film, but it's also a Daft Punk film. Yeah. You know, like he's done so much in Hollywood for other composers. I think because he genuinely loves his job and what he does. He's the man.
There was a funny thing I was noticing during. With Harry Gregson Williams' score for Gladiator 2, obviously there was a lot of Hans Zimmer in there.
Yeah, he had to.
And there were many times during the movie I would whisper to Maggie, remember who you are. Because there are times where they're talking to essentially this grown-up kid.
Yeah.
Who.
Oh, God. Everybody knows he's fucking Russell Crowe's son.
Yeah, he's Russell Crowe's son.
The weird looking little kid in the first one. The
prince that was promised.
Yeah.
who they hide away. It's very, you know, Man in the Iron Mask, and it's very Lion King. Which, speaking of Lion King, Hans Zimmer's score for The Lion King and Gladiator are so very similar. And so then hearing it again. In Gladiator 2, Which is, yeah, you know, why I mean, just like...
The best of them copy themselves. No, like, there's only so many ideas.
Cinematography was done by John Mathiesen.
And fucking perfectly, might I add.
This guy.
God damn it, is this movie beautiful.
This guy has a career. Yeah, some amazing, beautiful films in his career. He's worked with Ridley Scott on a few projects, like Gladiator, Hannibal, Matchstick Men. He also did the cinematography for Phantom of the Opera, the Gerard Butler version.
God, which is so bad, but I love it so much.
He did Robin Hood.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because these movies are not the same film, but, like, very similar.
Right.
Yeah.
X-Men First Class.
Solid.
He did this. Yeah, he worked on X-Men First Class. He also did Keanu Reeves' 47 Ronin, which is a beautiful film. Yeah,
it's a beautiful fucking film.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E., the Henry Cavill and Hammer movie. That's a beautiful
fucking film.
Logan.
Fuck.
King Arthur.
My King Arthur? The one that I love with Clive Owen? Or
no.
Oh, no.
The Guy Ritchie one.
God damn it.
Which I love.
Boo.
It's a great, terrible movie. Detective Pikachu. Really switch it up there. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Okay.
And
yeah,
bringing back together another thing that Kingdom of Heaven and Gladiator 2 have in common is the cinematographer. Yeah, so no, cinematographer,
actually, fucking composer, you know what?
And the director. So all they're missing was the
writer.
A writer, and it's too bad because I bet William Monahan probably could have made a better Gladiator 2 than what we got.
That was really bad. But my point is that while we were watching Gladiator 2, there's a scene where our main cardboard cutout, played by whoever, Paul Mescal.
He did better than the other cardboard cutouts.
I'm not saying he's a full, like, fucking, you know, Taylor Kitsch cardboard cutout, but... Like, you know, he's there. He's doing his best. But everybody was there for Pedro Pascal and Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
But nonetheless. Who, by the way, Pedro was barely in it.
Criminally Which is disappointing. Underused. Criminally
they put
underused.
Him the most in all of They were like, Pedro Pascal's hot. Let's cover this fucking movie and promotional stuff with him. And then, like, you get him for 20 minutes tops. But.
That's what it felt like.
Not the first time Hollywood's done that. It won't be the last. There's a scene where he is mourning his dead wife, because of course, out in the water, like he's clutching her body in the waves as, you know, they're bobbed up and down in the water. And as I was watching that, I was like, this is a lot like the fight at the end of Robin Hood with all the bodies in the water. And then there were other shots of like just establishing, you know, fighting shots. And again, I know that it's Ridley Scott, but like the shots are almost like they're very similar to what they were the Kingdom of Heaven. Like all three of those movies have the same look and the same vibe. And you know, I haven't seen Gladiator in a long time, but I'm sure that also has the same look and the same vibe. And so I'm just saying that Ridley Scott definitely has a way that he shoots historical fiction. And I don't hate it as long as the story is good. Right. So maybe Gladiator 2 needed a different story, and I would have cared. But
and, you know, like I said, that's the big difference between Kingdom of Heaven and Gladiator 2. They needed the same writer. Would have made it all better.
Would have made it all better.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure of it.
Unless the guy who wrote Gladiator 2 wrote Kingdom of Heaven, in which case we would not be sitting here right now.
Kingdom of Heaven was made for $130 million.
Yeah, and you see it.
2005. That's about...
You fucking see it. This is not a small film.
No.
No.
It made 47.
Oh!
Domestically.
Oh!
171 internationally. For a total of 218.
So it just barely squeaked by if you count international...
If you count international, but they don't get all that money
back.
And, yeah, it's just a bummer.
It is a bummer.
Because it really is a good film.
But at 3 hours and 10 minutes long, would it have made a difference? I mean, if people didn't want to see this movie, they weren't going to see a longer version of this movie.
It's true.
You know, it could have gotten maybe another 10 million.
You know, sometimes critics can persuade people to go see a long movie.
Yeah.
If especially if it's getting really good reviews.
Yeah, no.
I mean,
that's
I went
true.
And saw The Brutalist, and that was 3 hours and 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was mainly based off of critics talking about how much of a great film it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, it was nominated for 15 awards and won 5.
Well, that's actually, you know, a third of that. It's not bad.
Orlando Bloom won Best European Actor from the European Film Awards. You know, great job. Harry Gregson-Williams won Outstanding Original Score, and he got a Satellite Award for that.
All right, respect.
And he got a Hollywood Film Award as well for his music.
Okay, and that's it.
And, the Visual Effects Society Awards gave it for Outstanding Supporting Visual Effects.
Yeah, there are some pretty solid visual effects in this film.
I've never heard of the Yoga Awards. But they gave it to Orlando Bloom for Worst Foreign Actor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's shitty.
That's really rough.
That's really rough.
He shares that award with Elizabeth Town. So he has two Worst Foreign Actor Yoga Awards.
That wasn't a good year for old Orlando Bloom at the theaters. No. I mean, first of all, like, any award that... I know that we all kind of laugh about the Razzies, but truly, any award that gives somebody something for the worst of it, that's pretty dicky. Like, that's a douche move. You know?
And sometimes it's funny, because a lot of times there'll be an actor who is nominated for a Razzie for one movie they did, and then nominated for an Oscar for a different movie they did.
Yeah.
But given the right script, the right director...
I mean, true. Look what Pamela Anderson did with
The Last
Showgirl.
Pamela Anderson. Look with The Last Showgirl. Look what how we used to think of Kristen Stewart and the movies that she's done recently that have turned that around. Even Robert Pattinson has become a really, really great actor.
Yeah.
And
I'm not, of course, saying that Orlando Bloom is not a great actor. I mean, he's no Daniel Day-Lewis, but I don't think he needs to be.
Orlando Bloom is a different story. Orlando Bloom can do some like really good acting in moments, but I've never actually looked at him and been like, Orlando Bloom is a great actor.
Like I said, he's no Daniel Day-Lewis, but he serves the purpose of being pretty and kind of stupid. I mean, am I wrong? Like, look at Legolas. Pretty, very intelligent, but he's an elf, but kind of stupid because he's Orlando Bloom. I love the
dude. Is
he
just automatically stupid because he's Orlando Bloom?
He's got some pretty stupid looks. they're taking the Hobbits to Isengard was a choice reading, and it's turned into a thing. But I still love the guy. I wouldn't say he's a great actor,
no, I'm not saying that.
You know, I don't avoid films because he's in them.
I thought he was perfectly great. Like, I'm not saying that he should have been nominated for an Oscar for Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah. Oh, no.
But I think he does exactly what he's asked to do for
and
this
also,
movie.
That's what the character is. The character is a quiet, stoic man.
Absolutely.
Who is very strong in his will. He's very intelligent. And he's thoughtful, you know, for the most part, for his character. But he doesn't say a lot.
He doesn't. He doesn't have a lot of lines.
No, he's kind of the Ron Swanson of this bitch. He speaks when he needs to.
The director's cut, I think it was like 30 minutes before we got an Orlando Bloom line.
There's just a lot of him staring, which I think some people took for bad acting. But ultimately, I feel like that's...
Like I said, sometimes the director...
character.
Well, it's the director being like, I need you to just stare over there.
Yeah, I mean, if Ridley Scott didn't want that performance out of Orlando Bloom, we wouldn't have gotten it.
Yeah, I mean, the writing, the directing to me is just telling Orlando Bloom, this is what you need to do, and Orlando Bloom is doing those things.
He performs it perfectly.
I think he's doing what he's
I can't imagine anybody else in this role, for sure.
So Maggie, are you ready to get into the cast of Kingdom of Heaven?
I wrote down in my book, fuck this cast, and I would.
I know you would.
Certified hotties in this film.
Every single one of them.
Certified.
Orlando Bloom, of course, as we've mentioned. And then we've got Ava Green.
Oh, we've talked about her
before. We've talked about her at length, and we love
We love
talking
her so much.
About her yes. even more.
She is truly one of the most beautiful women on this planet, and she could spit on you, and I would thank her.
Me like, too.
She's just I love her so much.
Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig's first Bond movie. She's the love of his life, and he spends. It's the only Bond series of Bond movies with the same Bond.
Yeah.
Who has just thought nothing about anybody else except for her.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Because he loses her. Spoiler alert. He loses her at the end.
Yeah.
And it breaks.
If
him.
You couldn't have Ava Green, wouldn't you two go out and just be like, "Well, time to fuck the world to death."
If I had her and she died.
Yeah.
Yes, I'd fuck the world up.
Yeah.
Same way James Bond does.
Well,
I really like her in Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
I did not see that.
Tim Burton's film. Amazingly beautiful French actress that
we are in love
she's
with.
She's just... And we talked about The Dreamers before.
God damn it.
I don't think
it.
We need to... Ugh. If you guys haven't...
I think I need to rewatch some scenes of The Dreamers.
I need to just rewatch that whole movie again.
Yeah.
Ava Green. Just
certified hottie.
And then, of course, we've got some Liam Neesons.
Liam Neesons. Liam Neesons is the shit.
Liam Neesons is my shiznit.
Yeah, Liam Neeson. I mean,
he's in it for a short bit, but
I wish
memorable.
He was in it longer.
Yeah.
I wish a lot of people were in this movie longer.
There's a lot of great.
There's a lot of great actors.
We're
like,
that you're just kind of like, oh.
Oh, now they're dead.
But to be fair, in 2005, a lot of those actors were unknown.
I know.
You know, they were still coming up in their career and got, you know, to spend a week on set with Ridley Scott's probably a really big thing for them. So that's great. But like, you know, I didn't know who Kevin McKidd was at the time.
Sure.
I didn't know who Nikolai Coster-Waldau was at the time.
Sure.
And, you know, even Michael Sheen. I was like, oh, that guy again. It's a matter of, like, they're big now. We know them now. But back then, they were just another face. Look at Scott Grimes and Robin Hood, right? But now watching
we
this
know
film,
who Scott Grimes it was
yeah,
in,
no, of
when
course,
Robin Hood came out.
Band of Brothers, I love you so much. You know, at the time, this was big for them. And I'm very happy for them that they got to be in this film. And, like, yeah, nowadays, I'm like, oh, we should have gotten more of him. But at the time, just a character actor, man.
I remember when Liam Neeson... The first time I knew who Liam Neeson was, it was when my family got the internet for the first time.
You immediately went to liamneeson.com and...
I did. Well, you know, I was told how big his penis is. So...
Wie groß ist Liam Neeson's Penis?
In case you don't know, he has a famously, it is believed,
it is
famously large.
Yes. And if you've listened to Hollywood Babylon ever, you have heard many a tale about Liam Neeson's cock.
I didn't see Schindler's List.
No, I've never seen it.
Well, I have seen it.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it when it came out because I was only 12.
Yeah. That's another reason why I've never seen that movie is like they weren't going to take an 8-year-old to see it.
So that movie had already come out when the trailer for Rob Roy was released.
Fucking, of course you love Rob Roy.
1995,
yeah.
Rob Roy. I watched a trailer for Rob Roy on the internet. And that was like one of the first things I ever did on the internet.
That's
Rob,
so wholesome.
Rob Roy, and I listened to Weezer's Buddy Holly from their Blue Album.
Yeah.
Both... The trailer and their Blue Album came out the same year, and that has stuck in my mind all these years.
That's so cute.
Like 30 years later, I remember that was one of the first things I experienced with the dial-up internet that we finally had installed.
I don't know if I can say what the first thing I ever did on the internet was, but I do vividly remember the first time I saw the Lord of the Rings trailer on the internet.
Michael Sheen, of course.
Michael fucking Sheen.
We talked about
back
him
when
we
like,
did our our Tron Legacy episode.
There was a while there, you know, he's not the biggest actor ever. He's got a very nice career. He's done a lot of shit in England and Wales, his home country. You know, he's got a great chemistry with David. Like, we fucking love Michael Sheen. But there was a while there where Michael Sheen took whatever role he could get, which I appreciated. But I appreciate that now. At the time, he was just in a lot of fucking movies, and I was always a little like, wow, him again? Because he always kind of played a smarmy, douchey character. And it wasn't until I think I saw him on 30 Rock that I fell in love with him, because he was still smarmy and douchey, but really charming. And his character, and I cannot remember the name of his character right now, and it's something ridiculous too. I think it's his character's name is Wesley Snipes. And when everybody's like, you're also named Wesley Snipes, at one point he's like, who sounds like they have the name Wesley Snipes more, me, this like uptight British man, or a tall, you know, a tall, handsome, rich black man? And I always thought that joke was very funny. But yeah, like, it wasn't until I saw him on 30 Rock that I fell in love with him and have just loved him ever since. Even going back to watching some of, like, he's so good in this.
Yeah, I really like him in this. And he's not in it very long either. I mean, he's only in the first, I mean, in the theatrical version,
he's in it for barely there. 6 seconds, yeah.
He literally,
like, you see him at the grave.
You see him at the grave, but he has no lines. And then you see him bring Liam Neeson's character to Orlando Bloom. And that's really his only part. You have no idea that they're half-brothers.
Yeah.
And
conceivably then, he also, in the theatrical version, must be killed by Balin, because, you know, that is what set him on his road. But still.
A couple movies, other movies that I really like Michael Sheen in is Underworld, where he plays the werewolf.
See, he's
the head
fucking
werewolf.
He's always in something playing a bit of a smarmy douchebag.
Speaking of which, he also is in Timeline.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember Timeline.
Timeline.
It's with, it's a Richard Donner movie, which first of all is amazing. And then it's with Paul Walker and Gerard Butler.
That's it. You know what? Jessie made me watch that movie when she was going through her Gerard Butler phase, but I couldn't tell you anything about it.
It's a wacky, crazy movie.
But fucking, of course, Michael Sheen's in it.
But it's a fun time travel-y.
Yeah.
Like, I believe they go back to like 14th century France, so like 200 years after what we're watching.
Yeah.
And Billy Connolly's in it. David Thewlis is in it, which he's also in. We'll get to him because he's in Kingdom of Heaven as well. Like Michael Sheen, Martin Scokes, who's also in Kingdom of Heaven.
Oh my God. Do we need to get high as a kite and watch this movie?
We absolutely do, because Timeline is a terrible, but so much fun. Like, it's based off of a Michael Crichton book.
Yeah.
It's a fun time.
Dude, well, next time we have...
It doesn't take itself serious. It's just a time travel movie to 14th century France. Like, what's...
Like, we need to watch this film immediately.
If by the time you folks are
listening to this, we haven't gotten high and watched it yet, I will be shocked.
I own Timeline on DVD.
By the time you hear this, we will have...
Watched this movie. We will have.
This excites me so
much. Even, as soon as I press stop on this recorder, we might go watch it. A Finnish actor who I was really enjoying at the beginning of this movie, Joku Ahola, just a massive...
Oh, is he the big German guy?
He's the big guy who looks like he's a Viking.
Yeah, the big German guy.
Yeah, he's
Finnish.
He
was pretty hot.
He's Finnish.
Well... But in the movie...
It's true. In the movie, he is German.
He is Germanic, yes.
Germanic, yes.
And he's pretty fucking hot.
He's a massive man running around slaughtering people while he has an arrow in his neck.
It's... You know what? We lost him too soon. Like, way too soon.
Yeah. Like, as soon as you get to know some of these guys... Yeah.
Kevin McKidd?
Including Eric Abuani.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was really enjoying his character as
well.
Yeah,
and they immediately killed... You know, the black guy and the German guy, they just got him right out.
But we get to keep David Thewlis.
But David Thewlis' character is very interesting to me.
So he's next on the list. David Thewlis, he was Remus Lupin in the Harry Potter movies. He was, unfortunately...
He's been in a lot of shit.
The villain in Wonder Woman.
He's been in a lot of shit.
I mean, yeah. They can't all be winners.
No, and I think that... You know what? I don't think that he cares. I think he just loves acting so much, and I am always...
He looks like he's always enjoying what he's doing.
So, at the time that the third Harry Potter movie came out, I was a very big fan of that series. I am no longer... At the time, I was super into that fucking series, and I loved The Prisoner of Azkaban. It was my favorite book that I had read up to that point. I don't know who I could say Remus Lupin looked like in my head, but it wasn't David Thewlis. And so when they announced his casting, I was like, what the fuck? Like, I was angry. I didn't like the way he looked. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, I guess in my head, Remus Lupin was really fucking hot. Come to find out, David Thewlis is very fucking hot. And I just had to grow into him a little bit to appreciate him. Once I saw his performance, too, I was like, oh, dang. Maybe this is Lupin. Maybe I had it wrong. And he changed me around. Like, I didn't want him to be in that film because I didn't know any better. And then once I sat down and saw him, I was like, oh, shit, I was wrong. And I love David Thewlis. I'm always, always happy to see him in anything. And he's done some stupid shit.
He's done some stupid shit, but he's been in some really great things, too, like The Big Lebowski. He's one of the nihilists? German nihilists, right? Isn't he?
God, of course he is.
And then... Dragonheart, he plays the king whose heart is half of his heart is given to the dragon.
I haven't seen like Dragonheart in so many years.
It's such a good movie. It's like if I watched it today, which because it's been a while, I'd probably think it's dumb. I'm sure the dragon has not aged well, but it's still Sean Connery, and it's still probably my favorite Dennis Quaid movie. No, it's probably my favorite Dennis Quaid movie. Dennis Quaid doesn't make a lot of good movies.
No.
But
he made Jack Quaid, and we appreciate him.
Jack Quaid, that's the best thing he made.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who I don't think I knew rewatching it with you this time, I think when I saw him, I was like, I forgot that Nicolas Coster-Waldau was in this movie. Mm-hmm.
He has a very small part.
It's a very small part. And because he has a line right before they fight. Between him and Liam Neeson, he said, "You're a lord. I must give you the road," something like that. And I was like, "I have seen this movie like a dozen times, and I know that line from an actor."
Yeah, you just didn't know. But it was now, Jamie Lannister.
I swear to God, his face changed into Jamie Lannister.
Yeah.
So that was fun, just seeing Jamie Lannister in Kingdom of Heaven.
Jamie should have run away with Bran of Tarth and lived, you know, let Cersei die in the horrors of her own creation, because Jamie went through a lot to become a better person and then just lost it all in his last couple of episodes.
That's
and it
was every like, character that's last every season.
Fucking character. God damn it.
All this great growth.
And I don't even care that much.
All this great character arcs and growth.
And then just,
over the course of six plus seven seasons, whatever it was.
And then they literally just kicked every character off a cliff.
Yeah. They're like, oh, forget what you've been doing all this time.
They literally just like, they lined up all the characters on the side of a cliff and just shot them. It's ridiculous what they did to those characters.
Next, playing Guy de Lasagna. Martin Skokes.
Is that how you say his last name?
Sikosks.
I only know him as Celeborn.
He is Celeborn. He's not even known for being Celeborn on IMDb.
Which is ridiculous because that's what I know him for. But he has done a lot of shit and a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's one of those actors who...
Where does he hail from again?
Does not have a lot of getting those...
You know what? He's got a career. He makes his money.
It's great.
And... He seems to enjoy himself. He's a very handsome man. He's from New Zealand.
He's of English, Irish, and Danish origin. His mom's from Australia, and he was born in New Zealand.
I'm almost positive he did something on either Hercules or Xena because they were filmed down under. And everybody that was anybody down under was in either a Hercules or a Xena. I, of course, knew him from The Lord of the Rings, where he's just kind of quietly Celeborn in the background. Most of his shots are just him quietly in the background. He's not there a lot. But then I remember seeing him on in Aeon Flux.
And being like,
oh, I like this guy. Because if I'm not mistaken, he kind of plays a... Does he play a good guy in Aeon Flux? Or does he also play a bad guy? Ooh. I don't remember. I just remember loving the shit out
he's
of his
He's always
character.
A great bad guy.
He's a great bad guy.
Which is funny because in Lord of the Rings, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Essentially. He was also in XXX with...
Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel. Yeah. He played Yorgi, who's like this Russian mob boss. Martin's great. I always enjoy seeing him. I think he's really good in this. You know, fun fact, his dad was a trained opera singer. And at one time was a trapeze artist in the Hungarian circus.
Huh.
I love people's lives. They're just so interesting.
You know, I was on Martin Kusk's IMDb, and I accidentally pressed on a movie called Prize Fighter.
Oh.
That came out in 2022, so 2022, not too long ago. But it's got Martin Kusk's in it, Ray Winstone, Russell Crowe, Julian Glover, and a handful of other people that I recognize. And I'm kind of like, do I want to watch this film a little bit? At the turn of the 19th century, pugilism was the sport of kings, and a gifted young boxer fought his way to becoming the champion of England. Do I want to watch this movie?
Playing the wonderful role of Imad, we have Alexander Siddig.
I love Imad so much. It's ridiculous.
It's amazing. I grew up watching him on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
He played Dr. Bashir. He recently came back to voice that same character
in
Lower Decks. He was also in Vertical Limit, which is a movie that I actually really love. Vertical Limit. It's so terrible. It's Scott Glenn and Chris O'Donnell and Bill Paxton. As they climb K2, the peak of K2.
And end up in a lot of crevices, I assume.
They do. The opening shot, I saw it in theaters. The opening shot is him, his sister, and his dad climbing up like Half Dome or something.
Yeah.
And the, big ass screen. It's the first time, like, I've seen Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And Cliffhanger had some good moments, but you could always kind of tell.
I'm shocked that you would watch any of these movies with your fear of climbing.
I think that's why I watch it. It's very similar to horror films. You kind of just do it because it makes you... I mean, I watched Free Solo twice.
Yeah, but I remember
makes my
you,
hands clammy every single time.
And you made me watch that Ascent, and I had a panic attack.
And I would watch it again, even though I hate it. But, if you haven't watched Free Solo, it's a great documentary about a guy who climbs Half Dome without any rope or any kind of safety equipment.
No, thank you.
Just barehanded right up.
But anyway, so makes it. He's in Vertical Limit.
He's in the Vertical Limit. Yes. He plays a character that I enjoy.
He's also in Reign of Fire.
He is in Reign of Fire with Christian Bale.
God, that's a dumb fucking
movie.
It is
a terrible movie, and it's also fun.
Yeah.
He's a character actor.
Big in 24. He was in Game of Thrones as Doran Martell.
He was born in the Sudan. He grew up in Britain. He went to the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts.
He's so hot.
He has a great voice.
And this his character is
great
incredible
accent.
In Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah.
I
love his character.
You know, when we meet him, we do not know who he is. He is essentially kind of the second in command.
We believe he's a servant of a higher lord.
But it turns out that he's sort of the second in command to Saladin. But his interaction with Orlando Bloom's character really does set the tale for the rest of the film.
Yes.
And, like, both of those men have great chemistry, great respect amongst each other. Really, really good. And I love his character in this film. I'm so happy that when he pops up, I'm always very happy.
And then it's not until they get to Jerusalem that I had completely... And I have watched this movie so many times, but it's just been long enough where when we got to the point where you see Brendan Gleeson and Jeremy Irons, mm-hmm. I was like, holy shit, Brendan Gleeson and Jeremy Irons are in this movie.
I've already been overwhelmed
with so many actors and so many faces that I love. And then those two show up and I'm just like, oh my God. This is another reason why this movie is so great, because of those two men's acting.
Yeah, and their characters are fantastic. Brendan Gleeson plays the biggest son of a bitch.
Of course he does, because he's great at it. It's like Brian Cox. Anytime Brian Cox can be a villain.
Chatelet or something like that. Like, he's an app. Renald is dick.
Yeah, Renald is great. Chatelet.
I absolutely forgot that he was in this film, but I forgot that Jeremy Irons, like, I solidly forgot that Jeremy Irons was in this film.
Tiberius.
And when I heard his voice for the first time, fucking sploosh is all I can say. Like, my love for Jeremy Irons will last forever. It goes back to Scar. When I was like, I don't really like Scar, but I really like his voice. Like, Jeremy Irons is forever, babe. I love Die Hard with a Vengeance. I fucking love... That's a movie that I love that's too long. God, that entire, like, last half an hour where they go to, like, Montreal is so fucking stupid. But I loved Die Hard with a Vengeance. And my family, you know, like, grew up with brothers and a dad. They loved Die Hard 1. I could care less. Although Alan Rickman is objectively very hot. And, oh, I'll love him forever. But, like, I didn't really care about Die Hard 1. We watched Die Hard 2, like, once, and I was very bored by it and did not pay any attention. I've not seen Die Hard 2 in its completion at all. There is something... Actually, the thing about Die Hard 3 is Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson and...
Sam Jackson makes...
And them, Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
Their chemistry together.
Yeah, they make that... He makes that movie more... Because their chemistry is so good.
And But then...
It's so much better.
It made me watch it enough to get to Jeremy Irons, and I was like, oh, motherfucker. He's so fucking good in that movie.
Jeremy Irons and
Alan
Rickman could totally be brothers.
Look, if they were brothers, they could just destroy me, is all I'm saying.
Anyway, next.
I love Jeremy Irons, and you love him too, and you know it.
I do. I love Jeremy Irons. I mean, Scar.
Yeah.
He's always Scar in my head. He had a great part in the Watchmen series.
God, he is such a good part. I don't even want to say what character he is. Because
if you like Watchmen and
you haven't seen the series
didn't watch
yet.
The series because you felt like the Zack Snyder movie let you down one way or another.
Yeah.
Ignore that movie, even though I love it, but to each their own. But absolutely watch the TV series that Damon Lindelof created.
It's perfect. It's perfection. And it's a very interesting take on a lot of different themes, including race in America. But, like, I didn't know about the Tulsa Massacre before that show.
Same. Like, all these years on planet Earth, and you're like,
you would think that they'd teach it, but they won't. They're not going to teach something like that. Right?
Which is
insane.
A bad idea. Like, they'll teach you about World War II and the atrocities.
But we were the good guys. Not.
That's true.
We were the bad guys in Tulsa.
That's true. American history should only be told when we're the good guys.
But yeah, no, the Watchmen series is fantastic. And Jeremy Irons really does a fabulous fucking job.
And somebody who's in this film that I don't know if people would realize it without looking it up, because I sure didn't until you find out that Edward Norton plays King Baldwin.
I mean, Edward Norton's voice is pretty perceptible.
I don't know. It's not as recognizable as some others. Like, if it was Tom Hanks or, you know, somebody with a really recognizable face.
Do we know if he was actually in that suit?
Once you rewatch Kingdom of Heaven and listen to his dialogue, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, I hear Edward Norton now, but I don't think he'd pick him out.
No. If he didn't know. He plays King Baldwin of Jerusalem. He's got leprosy, so he wears a metal mask. At one point, you do see his face. It is not Edward Norton's face. And it, of course, has been also been caved in by leprosy, which is tasty and very gooey. But he is, he's a really wonderful character. You know, of course, this movie takes a lot of historical liberties. I don't think half of these men were as good as they made it out to be. For instance, Orlando Bloom's character, Balin of Ibelin?
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, he's made out to be this, like, good, noble character, and in reality, he wasn't. You know, none of them really were. But a lot of the historical people in this film, I think, are made to be a little bit better or a little bit worse, depending on what the movie needs. And that's fine. I mean, that's historical fiction. Like, what do you want? Don't take this movie as, you know, what actually happened.
No, this is fictional.
But,
like, what we're watching is fiction.
But King Baldwin was in the movie. But it is based off of
events.
Yeah.
It may not have been how things unfolded.
Well, there was nobody there to tell the story at the time, so.
I'm sure some people were just sitting there off the side of the battleground writing.
But no, Edward Norton things down. Is the voice of King Baldwin, and he doesn't.
He may have even been, according to IMDb, they usually point out when an actor is doing a voice.
Yeah.
And it just says he plays King Baldwin.
So, like, he spent the entire time just wrapped up in robes and with a mask on?
You know Edward Norton.
Yeah, no. And
you could see him being like...
That's an easy fucking role. Like,
I just want to... He doesn't have to
express much. He got to go to all the locations. He got the beautiful costumes, yeah. But he is just there, too.
He got to be in a Ridley Scott film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does a fantastic job. I love his character.
Ghassan Massoud, who plays Saladin... That's another actor whose voice was I loved when he spoke because I thought he had a great voice. I love his character. I love the respect his character showed.
Oh, Edward Norton's character. The respect that comes out of Saladin is so, it's so important to the film. And we will, once we get into the movie itself, you know, in another hour after we talk about the cast, because there's too many hotties, including him. His character has such reverence for other religions and other people, like, and kind of reading about, like, I'm actually looking at Saladin's Wikipedia and I've been going through it, and man, there's some crazy fucking stories in here. He was a largely forgotten historical figure in the West, in Islam, and in the Middle East, they still revere him as, like, a hero of their, you know, of theirs, but his particular history wasn't taught to me in school. But no, he does a The actor does, Ghassan does a wonderful job as Saladin, and you feel it. And also certified hottie.
Another movie he was in, he came back 9 years later to do another Ridley Scott film. He was in Exodus, Gods and Kings. He plays Ramsay's Grand Vizier.
Huh.
I
did not see Exodus, Gods and Kings because it looked awful.
It wasn't great. I mean, there's...
You're like, it wasn't.
I mean, let's good. Be honest. Well, let's be honest. We've got Christian Bale and Joel Edgerton playing Egyptian men.
Yeah, no, that's fucked up.
I mean, Christian Bale's playing a Jewish Egyptian man.
Oh.
And Joel Edgerton is playing a very Egyptian man.
Does he play Ramses?
Yes.
Oh,
Joel Edgerton plays Ramses.
And
Christian
God.
Bale is Moses. So yeah, Christian. It's
wow.
Like,
wow.
It could have been so much better.
Well, I mean, Iron Fist should be a man of Asian descent, but, you know, Hollywood does what it does. We love our white saviors, even when they're not actually white, Jesus.
I think that Ghassan Massoud, I think he would have been a better Jafar than Marwan Kenzari was.
Yeah, I know you don't really like the live-action Jafar. I do, because I happen to like that actor a whole lot.
Well, he's a young, handsome guy.
But he's a young, handsome guy, and Jafar is not a young,
is
handsome
not.
Guy.
And I think the actor who plays Saladin is older, and his face looks like the cartoon.
Yeah.
Like,
is give that him, why give he him looks a, so familiar?
Give him a goatee that's a little twirly at the end. but yeah, that's totally Jafar. And he's older. He's age appropriate to.
You mean like that kind of twirly mustache?
Yeah. Well, I meant goatee.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Just the mustache.
But yeah, personally, I think he would have made a great Jafar.
I still like that live action Aladdin, and you do too.
I like parts of it.
You fall asleep to it constantly.
Yeah, because it's boring. No, that's not true.
Wow.
No, I'm totally lying. So that's why lying. You
watch fall asleep to The Simpsons all the time?
Yes. It's boring as fuck.
Lastly, this movie has Ian Glen has a very small part. Of course,
he... That's right. Very end, yeah. Ian Glen, who played Drogh Mormont mm-hmm. in Game of Thrones. There's a lot of Game of Thrones actors in this. A lot of
Game of Thrones actors.
There's a lot of Harry Potter actors, yeah. And there's a lot of...
And Ian Glen, forever babe. Like, this cast is full of certified hotties.
One thing I like right away when the movie starts is I think it shows off the cinematography and music.
Oh, beautifully.
Very well and quick and immediately I'm just
you know you're watching a beautiful fucking movie.
I'm like, all right, I'm here, I'm ready. Let's get into it. I think the director's cut sets up the loss of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think they even mention that she kills herself.
Yeah, they mention that his wife has killed herself
and that he wants to go to Jerusalem to
forgive her sins
so that she can go to heaven.
But in the director's cut, it's, you know, she was pregnant, they lost the child, she slipped into probably a postpartum depression because of that,
right?
And killed herself. And, you know, of course, the extremely Christian town that he lives in is none too forgiving.
They don't take kindly to people who commit suicide.
Don't take kindly to folks who don't take kindly around you.
Hey, panda bears, we don't take kindly to your types in here. Now calm down, Skeeter, he ain't hurting nobody.
No!
I thought that it was interesting that even in France in 1184, which is when this movie takes place, that they knew that Christians are fucked up people. Like, I am really sorry to all my good Christian friends out there, and I know a lot of really, really wonderful Christians. But religion fucks a lot of people up, and this movie is kind of chock full of religious people who have been fucked up by their religion.
This is the second time we've had to talk about
in a very short amount of time.
I mean, seven, and now.
Yeah.
A little bit of a...
You know... Obviously, your choice of religion is your own. None of them are great. None of them are truly terrible, because they're all truly terrible. But I'm not saying just any one. I'm just saying that all of them have their good and bad parts, right? Like, I am not a religious person. And so but I do try to respect people's religions. But this movie is extremely critical of Christianity. And I'm not talking about what Christianity should be, but what Christianity is, which is people utilizing religion for power and money and subjugation.
That's exactly what this movie is about.
And that is what this movie is about. And it kind of comes out pretty quick on Front Street that you're like, oh, there's a lot of shitty Christians in this movie. Orlando Bloom's like the one pure Christian because he just believes in kindness and goodness and, you know, doing right for others and sacrifice. And, you know, it's like he's the better religious holy figure of this film.
I mean, did you see what town he grew up in?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
fuck. But, you know, but I found that this movie's criticism of Christianity to be deep and scathing and wildly enjoyable as me, a non-religious person. But I think I've always known that this movie has held Islam in reverence and with respect, because the two, you know, it is a Christian force going up against an Islamic force. And only recently have I started to learn more about Islam because of a very good friend, Sub Lily, who is Muslim. And she has taught me so much about Islam, you know, not as a way of conversion. She's just told, I've been curious about her religion, so she's told me a ton about it. And it is a religion of peace and of good people. But I have a lot more appreciation and understanding of Islam. And I was pleasantly surprised to see how respectful this film is towards its Muslim characters. And the respect and admiration and love that like King Baldwin and Saladin have for each other.
Yes.
The respect that Saladin has for Christians and Christianity when he picks up that fucking cross. I cry every time. And so, yeah, it's, I found that very interesting and shocking and really quite lovely that, you know, it put a mirror up to Christianity to be like, look at what you've become. But it kept a very pleasant, you know, especially for Hollywood, it kept a very pleasant respect towards Islam. Yeah. And I'm grateful for that, truly, because we've had plenty of movies where the brown Arab people are the bad guys. and
I mean, that was my whole childhood. Yeah. It was the action films were either
brown Arab guys.
Arab guys or Russian mm-hmm. or...
Yeah, but Russia's kind of held up their end of the bargain.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Sure. They're just such an easy
and all target. All Nazi Germans are British. That's another thing that we grew up with, is that if you were a Nazi from Germany, you sounded like a British man in every movie for our childhood for a very long time.
It's because nobody can do a German accent. Not even Germans, I guess.
Do you think that Orlando Bloom saw the script for this film and was like, oh, sweet, I've got blacksmithing skills?
He's like,
I've done that.
I've run around with a sword and bow and arrow before.
It's kind of funny. We were talking about this while we were watching the movie. It's like this movie in particular is almost like a culmination of everything that Orlando Bloom had done up to that point. Sword fighting, he had been trained plenty by some of the masters, too. Like Bob Anderson, for fuck's sake. Like, the masters have trained Orlando Bloom in sword fighting and military tactical thought process. He's ridden horses in a shit ton of movies. He's blacksmithed in a handful of movies.
He did all those things, but nobody taught him how to properly...
Emote,
well, that. Or release a bowstring correctly.
Well... Yeah, but he learned wrong once, and it sticks with you. But yeah, I bet you he was like, oh, cool, the training shouldn't be as hard. Because like he came off of Troy to do this movie. So like the man had been used to at that point with swords and sandals. Yeah,
Troy, pirates, and
I haven't seen Troy in so long. Do you think it holds up?
I have watched it recently. Well, that's not true. I watched an edited down version on YouTube mm-hmm. of some people reacting to it because they had never seen it before, and I... was very curious how they, what they would think of it rewatching it, and there's some really good moments. There's not a lot of fighting mm-hmm. as far as
they save their money for the Siege of Troy, didn't they?
Siege of Troy, because everything else before that, like the very first scene where you think a big battle's going to happen, Achilles just kills the first guy,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, well, so you win because. My guy killed your guy.
Brad Pitt was in that, too.
Brad Pitt was in that.
Fucking.
So was...
Eric Bana.
Eric Bana. Yeah. That's his name. And so was... what's her name from Inglourious Bastards?
Yes. I can see her face, but I don't
remember. She was the German woman. And then...
Diane something.
Diane... Kruger.
Yes, Diane Kruger. Haha.
And then also...
It's hard when your brain is its own working IMDb because oftentimes the cell service up there is real bad.
Eric Bana and Orlando Bloom's father
mm-hmm.
was...
Fucking...
Peter O'Toole.
Yes. Michael Caine and Peter O'Toole go to a combination Taco Bell pizza. Bring me your finest gin lovers pizza.
I like when... I believe it was Orlando Bloom because I think he was repeating something that his father had said. And it reminded me of Thor, essentially,
mm-hmm.
was because they're like, Jerusalem is a people, not a place. Just like Asgard is a people, not a place.
This could be Asgard.
This could be Asgard. This could be Jerusalem.
Shout out to Anthony Hopkins, our beloved. So this movie is about, essentially, it's about the Crusades. Our character is sent to Jerusalem because he is essentially told that his wife's sin of suicide will be forgiven if he goes to Jerusalem, right? Because in Jerusalem, you can become, in New York, you can be a new man, essentially. And that's what Jerusalem was for people back in the 1100s.
Right.
He meets up, he very much is like, he's one of those... bumbling heroes who just falls into things. Like, he's just going through his life, and he married a girl that he loves, and then she died, and now he is in the throes of depression.
Right.
Super sad man. And then all of a sudden, his rich-ass dad shows up and is like, yo, son, I'm your rich-ass dad. I'm about to die.
I'm sorry I knocked up your mom.
Possibly by force.
Possibly. Well, he did say, I didn't force her.
Yeah.
But he also said, like, she had objections.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay.
That is his interpretation.
I screwed your mom and you're the result.
But so his fucking rich dad rolls up and is like, yo, I'm about to die and you're going to get my name, my title, and all my money and all of the respect that I have earned in my lifetime just because I've met you for 4 seconds of your life after I fucked your mom. So that happens, right? And all of a sudden he's a knight. He bumbles through battle sequences. And in the director's cut, we find out that he was in the army. He was in an army that he has fought before, that he's worked with cavalry before.
He was a soldier in past, there were some past battles.
Skirmishes, he worked in the cavalry.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so he kind of just like stumbles into this great adventure. He's on a ship on the way to Jerusalem that sinks and he is the only survivor.
Him and a horse. Lone survivors.
You know, like.
Just by chance.
This fucker has got some plot armor.
He immediately stumbles onto somebody else's land.
Yeah.
And they demand to give him his horse.
Yeah, they want his horse. And he's like, this horse is mine. I took him off the beach.
And after, you know, 5 minutes of some, you know, light practice with his dad in the forest.
Literally light ass practice.
I know he's has experience, but he goes from just being a blacksmith.
Just a fucking bumbling dude.
Holds his sword really weird.
Yeah. He holds his sword down instead of high. But at the fighting style at the time, it's better to hold your sword. Like, having it right over your head seems very,
like, you're ready to strike. But I'm like, you're opening yourself up a lot.
But they explain that in the director's guide.
They do. A lot of things are explained in the director's guide.
All of a sudden, he's this man who's successfully killed this other great, skilled swordsman. Yeah,
another warrior who is trained to protect the real person that he's there with.
Yeah, and so he shows respect and kindness to Ahmad, and Ahmad is like, yo, I'm going to tell other people about you. Like, you're a cool dude.
Yeah, I'm going to tell the tales of your kindness
and respect.
Essentially.
Your enemies will know of you before they have ever even met you, I think is the line, which is a great line.
Yeah, yeah, essentially, because of your demeanor and your respect that you have,
your enemies will know about you.
Yeah, before they even meet you, they'll know of your worthiness or your... Yeah.
And
it was a great line. I wish I knew the actual line.
Then he stumbles into... You know, he finally gets to Jerusalem where he just wants to go bury the cross of his dead wife and ask for her forgiveness. And then he stumbles his ass into political intrigue, is given a life of luxury compared to what he was raised with.
Right.
And he's just like constantly just like, okay, I guess I'll go do that now.
I'll go do this now.
Which I guess is why Orlando Bloom is perfect for this character. Because he was just like, all right, now I'm building a well.
And then he's doing all
now
that.
Now I'm fucking Ava Green.
And then he meets the king for like 2 seconds. And the king is automatically just like
instantly in.
Can you marry my sister?
Yeah.
So that you'll be king of Jerusalem instead of this asshole.
And this is, by the way, after he has already had an affair with said sister, who's Ava fucking Green.
I mean, I'd have an affair with her.
If somebody was like, oh, and I would let you, as long as you shared once or twice.
Thank you.
And you would let me, as long as I shared once or twice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, like, this guy, it's just everybody that meets him is instantly like, this is a cool motherfucker. He's on our team. With the exception of the bad guys, of course, who are like, ha ha, him, twirly mustache, I'm going to get him. But, like, this dude just stumbles from one thing to another. And then by the end, he's this epic hero of Jerusalem who's knighting peasants and pissing off the church and, you know, surviving the siege of Jerusalem and all of that. Just to go back to that shitty place in France. I mean, I guess we don't know where he ends up in the end, whether or not he goes back to France and lives there in his town, where, by the way, he's a convicted murderer.
Yeah.
Or if just, you know, him and Ava Green are just passing through onto like England or something. But like, this motherfucker stumbles into more adventures. Then every time he's, you could just kind of be, see me like, okie dokie. One of my favorite scenes is when he's being attacked by the Templars and he's like sitting under the tree just relaxing. And all of a sudden he becomes aware that the Templars are coming for him. And that guy is just standing there like tapping his sword on the dirt. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
That was a great visual in the trailer.
Do you think... Now, the director's cut sets it up a lot differently from what I know the theatrical version does. But do you think that David Thewlis' character is God?
Why do you say that?
Because it has been... He seems like a spiritual figure, right? He only seems to appear kind of, by the way, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
He is constantly appearing.
Does anybody else see him?
to Balin. He's constantly just appearing with some really good advice on how to be the perfect Christian and a good man. And then he like quietly disappears again. And then there's that scene where...
Oh, yeah, towards the end.
Well, he's being like... I don't
not the end of the movie, but towards the end of
like
his...
There's like a burning bush scene where literally a bush ignites and
throws
him
a rock. He throws a rock at a bush. It hits another rock.
It sparks.
Causes a spark.
Yeah.
Lights the bush. David Thewlis' character is there.
Giving a spark of inspiration to Orlando Bloom.
And then
he kind of fades away.
He goes away, and even Orlando Bloom seemed a little taken aback that he's just gone.
Some people seem to think that he is the actual God going and giving comfort and counsel to Balin in those scenes.
Huh.
While it is never specifically said, I kind of look at him as like a guardian angel.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Because if you watch, and I really paid attention this summer, and if you watch his character's arc, and especially those moments where, like, he just randomly fucking appears to give, like, Yoda-level advice.
The best advice.
And then just dip out.
Run out.
He kind of feels like a guardian angel. And then later when you see him dead after that battle, right, because he's, you know, he goes off to this battle knowing that he's going to die. I kind of feel like that was... the guardian angel's way of being like, you're on your own, kid. You know,
I've done as much as I can do. The rest is up to you.
This is on you. Like, it's a very interesting... All right. If you pay attention to his character, it's a very interesting arc.
Next
where you're
time
like,
I watch
I
this,
don't know.
I'm going to go into it thinking that he's God or some sort of at least guardian angel.
A lot of people also tell Balin that he is his own man. A lot of this movie is people looking at Balin and being like, your soul is yours. What you do with it is on you.
Yeah.
You're your own person. Make up your own mind. He really just kind of stumbles into a lot of rooms with a lot of famous people. And he's just in the background like, my dad fucked a woman once and now I'm here. And I'm sad because my wife died. What do I do? And they're like, come, give us counsel. Be our favorite. Be our champion.
One of the lines I really enjoyed from Orlando Bloom was when somebody was asking why he's working so hard on his land. And he says that this is my land. What would I be if I didn't try to make it better?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that could be said not just from a person's land, but...
their life in general.
Their life. You know, a leader of a country.
The... fight scenes in this film are chaotic and dizzying and wonderful. Like, it, you know, Ridley Scott does ancient warfare very well. And yeah, there's a lot of scenes of like blurry, slightly slow motion people, a lot of explosions, a lot of like, you kind of can't tell who's fighting. In fact, there's even a scene in this movie where you see the two sides fighting over Jerusalem. And it's such a fucking political statement. And it's so smarmy, but I love it. As the camera pulls back, the color fades from the scene. So all you see is just human beings fighting each other, not knowing who's on what side and who's on the quote unquote right side.
Right.
I like how Ridley Scott does his action scenes. It's there's shocking violence.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, that dude's got a fucking arrow in his neck. Or, oh, God, they just decapitated that person. Like, it can happen so quickly. And it's, you know, it's not pretty. It's not one-on-one. It is groups of people. It is you are losing who your characters are or where they are. And it's just a bloody rampage for survival. And I like that. You know, I think that he does historical action very well. And, like, the man knows his shit. He's a historian. So, like, everything is period accurate to the extent that he can get it.
Yeah, in some cases. I mean, sometimes he puts sharks in the Colosseum.
Yes, but, I mean, fuck it. Wouldn't you think it's cool to see sharks in the Colosseum? Yeah. How did they get great white sharks into the Colosseum? What are the logistics there? That's the movie I want to see. Well, but also, for 30 seconds of seeing a shark eat a dude in the middle of the Colosseum, my goblin brain went, cool.
Jeremy Irons as well had a good line, and you kind of said it earlier when we were talking about religion, but he had said, I thought we were fighting for God, but we were just fighting for wealth and land.
Yeah, which is all religious battles have ever been. There's a line that David Thewlis has in this film that says, the Muslims will never forget, nor should they.
Mm.
And they've been through some shit, and they are still going through some shit. And I don't know, that line settled in my heart, and it was something that stuck with me. Having seen everything that's happened in Palestine over the last year and a half, they'll never forget, nor should they. I found that very interesting. I completely forgot about the boy, the prince.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's cut completely out of the theatrical edition. Her son,
Ava Green's son, is completely cut out of the movie.
Yeah, he's in the trailers, and that's about it. But he is he's the heir to Jerusalem after his uncle's to die.
Yeah.
But it turns out that he, too, has leprosy.
Yes. And he's right about this right age, too. When I took an anatomy class a long, long time ago in college, and one thing I remembered, the only thing from that class, that's not true. I remembered a few things. But one thing that has stuck in my head for a while is that it can take up to 10 years before you see signs of leprosy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can contract the disease, which is usually through blood, take up to 10 years before you even know you have it, which is just wild.
Yeah. So was he born with it? Did he instantly get it from his uncle? Who knows?
Probably. He may have been.
How could he be born with leprosy without her son having it?
Yeah.
They let him hold the child once, and that was a major mistake.
Leprosy was a huge disease back then. And
isn't it crazy how we've eradicated it?
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Due to science.
Due to science and
vaccines.
Probably some vaccines.
God damn it. But the scene where she essentially has to kill her son, where she puts her son through a merciful death because she knows that he has leprosy. She also knows that he is, as the new king of Jerusalem, his days are numbered. And I think that, because Ava Green, you know, she's a good mom, but as good as a mom as you can be when you mercy murder your child.
I mean, she didn't want to see her own son grow up and go through the same shit she saw her brother go through.
And she not also that makes didn't want to see
her own son.
Yeah, right, well, but it was probably a quieter death than, like, his stepdad had envisioned for him.
Very true.
Like, because now that he's the king of Jerusalem and he's a 12-year-old boy, you know, he's not long for this planet. I think historically child rulers are not
not very popular and not
kind of easily picked off.
Not long lasting.
I had forgotten about the scene where, you know, she deals with her son. She murders her son. And I was wrecked by that.
Sure. It's
a hard scene.
Yeah, of course.
She gets so much more agency in the director's cut, which is interesting considering that literally the last hour of this film, which is mostly battle scenes, her job is to stand on a balcony staring off into the middle distance. And occasionally it just cuts back to her watching and you're like, she's like a mile away. She did not just see that up close scene of Balin like protecting one person to protect another. But like it always cuts back to her as if she's just binocular eyes.
Eventually she goes and helps the wounded.
Yes.
The first night after the main battle.
But I felt like they really just had to establish that she's still there.
Of course. I mean,
and the director was just like, yeah, the direction was, hey, Ava Green, most beautiful woman on this planet, just go stand right there and stare off in the middle of space and we'll just change the background behind you.
It is a 30 to 45 minute sequence.
It is a lot.
Last battle.
But you don't need to be constantly cutting back to
they
just
want you to know that she still exists.
She's still there and she's still staring off into the middle distance.
No, she's helping later.
Eventually. Yeah. But there is, I could go back and count the amount of just Ava Green staring. And she has incredible eyes.
She has incredible eyes. Why wouldn't you have her stare?
I would, if she chose to stare at
me, all night long.
I would be blessed.
What's the problem?
I just think it's funny
that. Was it because she wasn't looking right into camera?
No, I just think it's funny that half of her character is just staring off into the middle distance. Like, it felt like they were like, we need more of her. Put more of her in it. You know, after you cut out her entire storyline and most of her agency, let's just go ahead and throw in some random establishing shots of Ava Green staring off in the distance
and this just
so that
shows,
we remember she's there.
Once again, this just shows how much better the director's cut is.
It really is.
And we're really not going through this movie beat by beat. I know this is a bonus episode, but I'd really encourage people out there to look for the director's cut of this movie. I don't know if it's available on streaming, it's probably something you'd have to buy or rent.
I know for sure you can rent the director's cut off of Amazon Prime for like less than $5.
Yeah, do that.
Because
guys,
I offered to pay for a couple people to watch it because I'm like, shit, you need to watch this film so that when we talk about it, you understand.
It's true. And I know we're already like coming to the end of this episode and now I'm asking people to go watch it first.
Well, you know.
But
Maybe you'll have a better appreciation of it after listening to us talk about it. I wrote down, this movie is, where is it? This movie is so cheesy, so stupid, but also so important. I think that its take on religion, its take on warfare, its take on...
Especially holy warfare.
Especially holy warfare. And is still very relevant for today.
Absolutely.
And, you know, with everything that's been happening in Palestine, by the way, this movie takes place, and, you know, it is still extremely important that we are aware of those struggles and also aware of the people that are getting constantly trampled on in the name of somebody else's religion. You know, this movie has a lot of great lines. Like, at one point, Orlando Bloom asks Sully Dean, like, what is Jerusalem worth? And he replies, nothing. Everything.
Yeah, I love that line.
It's a great line because it's true. It's just a plot of land, but it's a plot of land that is important to three of the biggest religions on this planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has crossed hands of power through all three of those religions since it started, essentially. And, you know, ultimately, it's kind of worth nothing, but it's everything.
Right.
And I think that this film is beautiful and its respect of religions. I mean, it's disrespect of people who use religion for their own gain.
Yes. Anyway, Maggie, what would you give Kingdom of Heaven out of 5 stars?
I'd give it a 4.5. I really fucking love this movie. I don't think it's like perfect. Which is why it's not getting like a 5-star film, but the cast is great. The writing's really good. The acting is decent where it needs to be. But the story is beautiful. And, you know, it's funny cause I'm not big on sword and sandal films. Like I don't really like gladiator movies.
Hey Billy, you like gladiator movies?
And the answer is not really. And I also am not a huge fan of crusade films and stories. But I think that this is just kind of the perfect story because it's showing what good men would do in the face of power and evil. I like that a whole lot. And yeah, it's filled with pretty people and the music is really great. And I didn't even get to talk about the prayer cycle, but check that out. What about you, honey? What do you think?
I was also going to give it a 4.5.
God, we're too similar.
Really? It's
like,
should scary.
We start... Well, no, because there are plenty of movies that you love
there's
that I don't.
There's plenty of movies that we will disagree
we're
on.
We're getting into a full list of them here
soon. We've done... There are times where we both agree a movie sucks.
Yeah.
And there are times where we disagree on whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
This case, this is a movie that we both like. And I think that's another reason I like this movie is because I know I can turn it on and you'll watch it with me.
This is true.
Maybe not every time. You might look at your phone a little bit.
Yeah. But I don't know. I this movie's going to suck me in pretty well. Yeah.
No, I enjoy watching it, and you're right. The one aspect of this film that I think prevents it from that extra 0.5 is probably the acting.
Yeah.
Not on everybody's part. There are some really good moments, and there's some actors that are just blowing me away with how much they're just really into their characters.
And then there's just Ava Green staring off into the middle distance.
I watch it all day.
Look, I just... If that's all they gave her to do...
That's not a negative.
It's not an... It is if that's the only thing they give her to do.
That's not the only thing.
There should have been more scenes of her, like, helping people.
She had to kill her son. Where do you want her to look?
Well...
She's trying to find him in heaven. Like...
In the kingdom of heaven.
That's what it's called, that. She's looking in the kingdom of heaven
off into the middle distance.
Yes.
For her son.
He's there.
He's just staring off into the middle distance. How long can I let this go? This is my podcast
my eyes
now.
Are stinging. So, Maggie.
Yes, caveman.
I have two questions for you.
Hit it.
I'm a producer.
Congratulations.
I have a part for you.
That is just physiology.
Wait, what? God, that barely even sounded like him.
I'm a producer.
Congratulations.
I have a part for you.
That is just physiology.
I've got nothing. What's that from?
I'm a producer. How's it go?
I'm a producer.
Congratulations.
I have a part for you.
That is just physiology.
It's just physiology. And his little...
what is that from?
That's from Mojave.
Oh,
I
smart.
Figured, I yep. figured.
No, I should have guessed that. No wonder I did not recognize it at all, too.
So, Maggie.
Yes.
First question. Mm-hmm. Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made this movie better?
No. I love this film. I love him. I would have ultimately been pretty happy to see. I mean, we got to see him in a Ridley Scott film. He, you know, he played Prince John in... Robin Hood. Insane eye contacts. Gosh, but him with bright blue eyes, it just did not work.
He was also in Body of Lies, which was another Ridley Scott film.
And Russell Crowe movie, right?
And written by William Monahan.
Well, there you go. I mean, the man's done great work.
Yeah, and Russell Crowe.
But I don't think that necessarily he, you know, I wouldn't like this movie any more or any less if he was in it. So I don't think he needs to be in it.
So second question. Which character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
Well, the funny thing about Oscar Isaac being the world's most beautiful man and, you know, from Guatemala, so he has beautiful olive skin and dark hair and dark eyes. He would have been put into a Middle Eastern character, right?
Yeah.
He would have been one of the Arabs who were fighting. I don't know who. You know what? Honestly, the prince or the nephew... of Saladin, who comes to Saladin and is like, we need to pick off these motherfuckers right now.
You promised.
And Saladin's like, yo, they're not. Like, King Baldwin's not who we fight with. But those Templar motherfuckers, we'll get them. You've just got to wait so we can get them.
Yeah, you just got to outlive the king.
Yeah. So, like, I could see him in that role. But I couldn't pick. Like, I guess he also could have been, like... one of the dudes in that French town, because he also does kind of look vaguely European, or he could have been a part of Liam Neeson's little band of miscreants and gotten picked off immediately. But I think they would have shoehorned him into a Middle Eastern character unnecessarily, by the way, because he's not Middle Eastern.
I could see him also. I think he could pull off the Michael Sheen character.
He could have been the Michael Sheen character. You know, considering that he wears a mask the entire time, he definitely could have been King Baldwin.
Yeah, absolutely. King Baldwin, that's an easy one.
Yeah, that's a really easy one. And just give him those crazy blue contacts again. But I love this film and I love Oscar Isaac, but it's like peanut butter and chocolate. I don't need them to be together. And that has been the first bonus episode for February of Movie Mingle on Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut. And we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. Seriously, if you made it through the podcast and you haven't seen it, go watch this fucking film. Yes, it's 3 hours, but it's really, really good. And if you don't like it, you can always email us at moviemminglepod@gmail.com to let us know your feelings. You can also find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod, and YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. As ever, feel free to rate and review our silly little show on whatever podcast platform is of your choice. But, you know, tell people about us. Like, let's spread the word about our silly little show, because it's made with a lot of love. And gosh, do we love the movies. It's just, you know, I was listening to Caveman earlier talk about how young he was watching some films, and all I could think was just like, oh, you were even a movie nerd back then. Like, this is where we're happiest. So let other people know, and they can all come join the family in the fun. Next week, next Wednesday, for our regularly scheduled episode, we will be dropping Monsters, Inc. And also be sure to be on the lookout for the other February drop, which is another choice pick of Caveman's, which I'm not excited about, but I promised I would watch it with him, so here we are. Hooray! They can't all be ones that we both love. Take good care of yourselves, and remember, to get to Jerusalem from Europe, you just go where the men speak Italian, and then go a little bit further until they speak something else. And go mingle. Bye!
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar?
I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. Toga. Toga.